For the video version of this podcast, please visit our YouTube channel, Daughters of the American Revolution, National Headquarters. Otherwise, please enjoy this audio podcast on your favorite streaming service.
They knew it could mean the end of their lives or the beginning of a whole new country. And there you are on the edge. And I thought that is, it's not just a footnote. It is a significant, recognizable event.
Hello and welcome to the DAR Today podcast. I'm your host, Brooke Bullmaster-Stewart. We hope you enjoyed our inaugural episode of this podcast that aired on August 15th, 2022. Wasn't it fun getting to know Mrs. Wright or a little bit better? It's going to be a really enjoyable 3 years during her administration, and we'll be talking with all of the executive board members within the coming year. I can't wait for you to meet them. Well, today we have some really special treats in store for you. It's September, right? The leaves on the trees are becoming flaming colors of red and gold. There's a delightfully cold breeze starting to blow, and we can really feel autumn in the air. Who am I kidding? There's practically no such thing here in Southern California. And my next guest knows all about that, being a Southern California daughter herself. I'd like to introduce you to the national chair of our Constitution Week committee and my dear friend, Adele Lancaster from San Diego.
If you don't mind, tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
Well, I joined the DAR in 1989 in order to spend at least one day a month with my mother, and have done many, many things over the years, served as California State Regent, and now have the wonderful experience of being the national chair for the Constitution Week Committee.
Adele, for those who are not DAR members, or for those who are new, would you tell us a little bit about your committee and its history?
I'd be happy to. Considering the Constitution as a safeguard of our liberties and champion of our freedoms, the purpose of celebrating Constitution Week is to emphasize the responsibility of protecting and defending it, preserving it for posterity, understanding its significance to our heritage and its foundation to our way of life. In 2005, a federal mandate to teach one day of Constitution education gave chapters an opportunity to participate in the local schools with activities relating to the Constitution, creating Constitution Week programs, donating Constitution Week kits, and things like that.
That's wonderful to hear. I didn't really realize that tie-in. And of course, we had the podcast last month with the national chair of DAR school, Don Crumley Lemongello, and talking about the importance of education and promoting education in our schools, of course, as one of the basic DAR tenets. So it's neat to see how this committee now ties in so closely with education, isn't it?
Yes.
So Adele, what will your committee be doing during the Wright administration?
Well, as this administration prepares and builds these next 3 years toward the celebration of the country's semiquen, it's really important that we consider the importance of the Constitution. Would we be celebrating 250 years as a country of United States without it? It is the opinion of many, Brooke, that we would not. Consequently, during these next 3 years, we'd need to pay particular attention to understanding the backstories to the Constitution. How did the leaders of the Constitutional Convention prepare themselves for their work? How does the preamble outline the content of the Constitution? All of these questions and more can be discussed and answered throughout the years with minutes, newsletter articles, and programs. Chapters can use the material found on the committee's web pages, but they are also encouraged to dig deeper. Search on the internet, go to noted sites that study the Constitution, and share.
And for those who are not members who are listening or watching this podcast, we also want to encourage them too, right, to find ways that they can not just honor the Constitution, but also to teach others about it, to search out information about it. And so what I hope is that what the chapters choose to do, of course, with encouragement from your committee, that they might find those things that chapters are doing within their communities. And it'd be kind of neat over these next few years to, you know, to kind of talk about those over time and say, this is where you can find this event that has to do with the Constitution. So could I ask you, Adele, that if you ever do hear anything about things that are happening in a certain area that have to do with education about the Constitution, that you'd let us know that? Would you ever come back?
Absolutely. Information is shared with the division vice chairs, and the division vice chairs let the state committee chairs know, and the state committee chairs then, in turn, blast the information out to their chapter chairs.
That's wonderful. Committees. Yeah, that'll be great. I think if we can make sure that, you know, it's not just within our membership, but also to the public that's interested, that would be great.
And, Brooke, there also is information on the public DAR website.
Oh, good.
So people who are not part of DAR and don't have access to the members' website can go onto the public website under the education portion and find information on Constitution Week.
Oh, that's wonderful to know. And of course, we always say it at the end of our broadcast, but that's at dar.org in case you're listening. And so you were mentioning your national vice chairs. Would you tell us a little bit about who is serving with you on your committee?
Yes. Okay. We've always had the division chairs in order to help disseminate information. But the vice chairs and the committee members who are serving at the national level are new to the committee this year. I'm very pleased to have Nancy Davis and Stephanie Goodwin both serve as vice chairs, and they are both from Texas. And Sarah Town-DeSico is serving as a member working on content. Members are encouraged to read the lead story in the new September-October issue of National Defender. Sarah has provided an amazing narrative or backstory into the Declaration of Independence. The article will be available through our committee resources soon, too.
Thank you so much. And I have the distinct honor of knowing Sarah, and what a wonderful, incredible writer she is. So what a blessing to your committee she will be over these next 3 years, right?
Yes. Her research capabilities and the resources that she uses are unparalleled.
Well, Adele, thank you so much for taking the time. It's kind of an opportune time right now for you to be talking about this and really helping encourage us to learn more about the Constitution. And really appreciate you being with us today.
Well, thank you. It is our hope and intent that chapters will begin their own study and enlighten the public in their communities using the opportunity of time, September 17 through the 23rd, to focus on Constitution Week.
One of the things we're most looking forward to doing on this podcast is to encourage not only our DAR members, but members of the public as well, to engage in our American holidays. Constitution Day, as Adele mentioned, will have some wonderful events throughout the country, and we encourage you to look for the ones in your community. For example, will you be in Philadelphia on September 16th or 17th? They're going to have some wonderful events at the National Constitution Center on Arch Street. They'll have things like a Battle of the Branches show, where visitors learn the importance of the checks and balances and responsibilities of each branch of government. You can even sign a giant constitution, or you can participate in activities centering around the First Amendment, especially for kids, with a scavenger hunt and a craft station. Looks like a lot of fun. Likewise, if you'll be in Colonial Williamsburg for the weekend of September 16th and 17th, you could listen to the United States Air Force Heritage of America Band, the U.S. Fleet Forces Band, playing works by eminent American composers. This looks to be a wonderful concert honoring our Constitution. College students can also look for events happening on their campus. For example, in Georgia, members of the Augusta University community will join together to read the Constitution from the preamble to the last amendment. And after lots of other activities that day as well, all will be followed by pizza with patriotic swag and pocket constitutions given out. Now, the NSDAR is not affiliated with any of these organizations. We tell you about these as an example of what is happening out in the different communities. We want to encourage you to look at your own states, counties, and cities and find out what's happening. Go visit these events. Participate in celebrating our American Constitution. Over 100 years ago, the Flag of the United States of America Committee was established to promote a deep patriotic sense of respect for our flag. In 1909, NSDAR presented this committee with these principal objectives: to keep the flag flying and to protect it continuously under all conditions, as well as educate citizens regarding its correct usage. With that aim in mind, this podcast will occasionally speak to these objectives. For example, with our dear President General's theme, Championing the Stars and Stripes Forever, we wanted to share this story with you today. The Stars and Stripes originated as a result of a resolution adopted by the Marine Committee of the Second Continental Congress, which met in Philadelphia in 1777. The colors of the flag were chosen carefully, the Founding Fathers looking for meaning and significance rather than just simply being aesthetically pleasing. While red symbolizes hardiness and valor, white symbolizes purity and innocence, and blue represents vigilance, perseverance, and justice. The sight of the Stars and Stripes sparks feelings of patriotism and gratitude for the brave actions of our colonial ancestors, men and women who risked it all to forge a new and independent nation. Preparing, serving, and drinking tea was woven into the daily life of many early American colonists, and on October 25th of the year 1774, a brave and defiant Penelope Barker invited 50 friends over for tea. Where was this tea held? Who were these women? What were they up to? Well, pour yourself a cuppa and listen to the story of the Edenton Tea Party. Edenton is North Carolina's second oldest city and was a bustling center in colonial times. It's here that Penelope Barker was born, on the Albemarle Sound off the coast of North Carolina. As the colonial independence movement grew in intensity, there came to be an increase in riots, general civil unrest, with more and more of the colonies expressing their displeasure in the crown, signing resolves, refusing to purchase many English imports. Penelope, because of her husband's position as treasurer of the province of North Carolina, probably realized as much as any other person the potential costs of the colonists' actions. On the 25th of October, 1774, under Penelope's coordination, 50 women came to sign a resolve, a document to show that they too would be supporting this boycott of British goods, specifically tea and textiles. But there have been differing accounts. One of the primary errors in these stories is the belief that there was, in fact, a party of 51 women gathered at the home of Mrs. Elizabeth King, who was a prominent member of the Edenton community. Well, some say that the King home was too small for such an assembly. And then the wording of the resolution, too, does not indicate a gathering specifically, but rather an agreement. There is no doubt, however, that the ladies of Edenton sent the document to England in 1774. This letter sent to the King of England states, and I quote, "As we cannot be indifferent on any occasion that appears nearly to affect the peace and happiness of our country, as it has been thought necessary for the public good to enter into several particular resolves by a meeting of members deputed from the whole province, it is a duty which we owe not only to our near and dear connections who have concurred in them, but to ourselves, who are essentially interested in their welfare, to do everything as far as lies in our power to testify our sincere adherence to the same. And we do therefore accordingly subscribe to this paper as a witness of our fixed intention and solemn determination to do so." End quote. Barker believed that such actions by women, essentially affecting the British economy, would not go unnoticed in England, and sent a copy of the declaration to the British press. She said at the time, and I quote, "Maybe it has only been men who have protested the king up to now. That only means we women have taken too long to let our voices be heard. We are signing our names to a document, not hiding ourselves behind costumes like the men in Boston did at their tea party. The British will know who we are." End quote.
The women's abstinence might well have passed unnoticed by history, if not for an unflattering caricature appearing in the Morning Chronicle and London Advisor on the 16th of January, 1775, which depicted the women as low class and unfit mothers. The women were portrayed with masculine features. A child is depicted in the foreground playing on the floor without supervision, suggesting maternal neglect. A dog representing loyalty is shown urinating on a box of tea. In the background of the image, the ladies are drinking from a punch bowl, an activity commonly reserved for men during social gatherings, and appear to be fraternizing promiscuously in a manner unbecoming to women. The artist insinuates that these are not truly ladies, nor are they suitable to express or wield political opinions or power. Political resistance was common, but an organized women's movement was unique. And although ridiculed in England, the women's actions were actually lauded in the colonies. Now, there has been much confusion about the Edenton Tea Party, primarily because the event went unrecorded in North Carolina. It remained unknown until 1827, when a North Carolina naval officer purchased a rendering of that satirical cartoon in a shop abroad. Following his discovery, citizens tried to piece together what they believed must have happened in Edenton in 1774. The Edenton Tea Party is recognized in American history as one of the earliest organized women's political actions. Today, a beautiful bronze teapot placed near the 1767 Chowan County Courthouse is a reminder of their bravery. It reads, "On this spot stood the residence of Mrs. Elizabeth King, in which the ladies of Edenton met October 25, 1774, to protest against the tax on tea. The teapot sits among hydrangeas and other English shrubs, very fitting to remember those courageous ladies." Do you have roots in North Carolina? Are you looking for that elusive female patriot? Well, here are 51 ladies waiting for you to claim your heritage. The NSDAR, as a result of the 50 plus years of work by Miss Elizabeth Van Moore and many others, officially recognized on December 10th, 2020, these women as Revolutionary War patriots. Past Recording Secretary Peggy Troxell, Mrs. Gay Davenport, and of course our past Registrar General Pat McFall all helped submit the application for these women to be recognized, each contributing their unique part to the cause. I had the privilege of speaking with Gay Davenport recently.
You were saying you were researching your ancestor.
Right.
When you were doing this research, is that when you found out she was part of this resolve?
Right.
Is that
That's
what
right.
you found out? How did you yeah. find that out?
Well, I had been to Edenton. I had seen her name on the list of their publicity things. And you think, well, I wonder how we're related. Mm-hmm. And then you start investigating. So I knew she had signed, but I didn't know the significance of it. Mm-hmm. And it was as I became aware of the significance of it and broke this. Yes, there were other protests. But this was emphatically a political act mm-hmm. because it was in support of the men who had been in that first provincial Congress. And that was not legal, though. Josiah Martin didn't call that. They met under the radar. And when they did meet, they acknowledged that the Crown was not working for them. And they realized that they could govern themselves. Well, all that discussion went back to their families. And these women in Edenton were in a unique position to be aware of how close to revolution they were. Mm-hmm. And they also realized how risky it was because of about the Boston Tea Party and how they blockaded the Boston Harbor. They knew what the Crown would do if they lost their cause. And these women signed their own names, not just to say, we're not going to use tea and not to minimize that, but that was good. But they said, we owe it to ourselves and to our families to support these men in opposing
the crown. Well, that is political.
And that's that bravery, is
amazing. That's amazing because they weren't allowed on the assembly floor. They didn't have those roles. These women, these 51 women, that's a story that I am just, it excites me.
Yeah.
They were invigorated. They saw something that meant something to them and their families enough to say, I mean, they didn't know they were going to win the revolution.
Nope.
And their names were on the line.
Absolutely.
That's significant.
It had to be the story for the first Patriot Profile that we told on this podcast, because it was just of that much significance. I just thought, being DAR,
right,
what a story to tell.
I was able to ask Mrs. Davenport in the interview if she thought that women would find it difficult to trace their lineage back to these newly established DAR patriots. And this is what she had to say.
Honey, listen, our little genies, they can work it out. People have said, oh, yes, well, they have a hard time to showing their identity. I thought, whatever information you have, you can present it at some point. And we all have to learn how we need to refine and use primary sources as much as possible instead of derivative sources.
I have
great faith. I have great faith in the organization, in the genealogist, and in people making their own cases. Because I tried to make this one for Susanna for many years. And
were they approved in 2020 or was it 21? Was it 2020?
It was 2020 because I was going to put Susanna's supplemental application in, but I didn't want to do it in 2020. So I waited till January 21, and that's it. It takes a long time, but Susanna Saltervale is accepted, and her lineage, the lineage to her, is accepted. So we know it can be done. Oh, I want these women to check out all these surnames. Oh, mercy me! And
really,
the way they married, there are a bunch of them. It's more than a footnote. It's a very significant event.
Yes.
And it says a whole lot about women. It says a lot about women's thinking. It says a lot about women's intelligence and grasping the significance of that historical moment that they knew it could mean the end of their lives or the beginning of a whole new country. And there you are on the edge. And I thought that it's not just a footnote. It is a significant, recognizable event. They had to consider what kind of danger they were putting their families in, but their husbands and sons and fathers. And that's the other thing about this thing that caught my eye. Take a look at the Englishmen. They made fun of us. They tried to humiliate us.
Yeah.
The men here were totally supportive of these women. They left their entire land, their fortunes, their businesses, their whatever they had, they left that in those hands while they were gone. And they learned to respect what women did. They learned to accept their opinions. They learned to accept their judgment calls.
Yeah. Look at these women. They weren't trying to be in charge of the assembly. They weren't trying to be anything.
No.
They served in the capacity that they were in at that moment, but they served in such a massive way to be able to go, this means that
this
we
means.
Are putting our names behind it.
That's exactly.
That's incredible.
Further in the interview, Gay Davenport shared her thoughts on how these female patriots ultimately got approved in 2020. She also spoke to the importance of past recording Secretary General Peggy Troxell and how vital she was to the whole mission.
The time was right. Peggy knew how to do it. Mm-hmm. She knew how to present it. And she took my research and it just meshed. Peggy has a lot of gravitas. She is a serious, caring person about DAR and about all the parts of DAR. And so she knew the North Carolina Daughters, we had talked about it for years, you know, how puzzling it was that we hadn't been able to do it. But at the same time, we could see the more we talked, the more we understood the significance of what we were saying. that we were able to overcome the idea that it was just a tea party. That's a big thing. It wasn't. So we were able to clarify it in our thinking, and the daughters in my chapter always supported what I was doing, and the North Carolina daughters were always behind Peggy and me for doing whatever we could to get them recognized.
Hearing a personal account gives us a window into the process of getting new patriots approved and recognized by the National Society. Interviews like this are so important to memorialize this event. 51 female patriots, all approved at once in the year 2020, is not only history, but is historic. So with this news that the courageous women who signed the Edenton Resolve are now proven and approved Revolutionary War patriots, this means that women who are their descendants are eligible to join the DAR. Well, most join our organization through connections to a male patriot, but imagine what an honor that would be to join our organization recognizing one of these brave women. And can you imagine further still what a frustrating experience if you couldn't find the documents you needed to prove your lineage to them? Well, thankfully, the NSDAR has so many committees filled with extraordinary people that can help with this very problem.
We're speaking today with the National Chair of the Lineage Research Committee, Susan Johnston. Susan, thank you so much for being here today.
Glad to be here.
Well, for those who aren't DAR members that might be listening or watching, or for those who are new, would you tell us about your committee and a little bit of its history?
Certainly. The Lineage Research Committee was created with the purpose of helping prospective members with their papers. You know, most people don't realize this, but most of the papers prepared for DAR are done by volunteers. We have very little or no training outside of DAR. We don't know everything. No one knows everything about genealogy because it's such a broad subject. So the Lineage Research Committee was established to help with those applications when help is needed. Our committee motto is genealogy is a team sport. So we are there to help any way we can with applications.
And tell us, what will be new with your committee during this Wright administration these next 3 years?
Well, the first thing is, it's very exciting. All of the genealogy committees that DAR has have been reorganized under the umbrella of the DAR Genealogical Commission. Mm-hmm. And the national chair of that is Janine Dobbins. The purpose of it is so that we can communicate, we can share with each other what's going on, we can help one another when appropriate, and work together as genealogy is a team sport. We're going to take that all the way across many committees so that we're all rowing the boat in the same direction. Another change is that the former 250 task force has been renamed. We now call it the Application Task Force. The reason it was renamed is that it was confusing to people to have several committees that said 250 in them, referring, of course, to the 250th anniversary coming up. So we've renamed it. The Application Task Force is now going to be working on those applications that have received a letter from the genealogist asking for additional information, and they'll focus on the most difficult of those letters as they approach the end of the two-year period that we're allowed to work on a paper for verification.
Yeah, I love that change. That's going to be really exciting because I think even myself, I was confused with the 250 in a couple of the different committees. So that'll be really good. I think a nice clear change. So Susan, tell me this, with regard to the Lineage Research Committee, how would one go about requesting help from your committee? And how will that, you know, kind of be different going forward in the Wright administration?
The Lineage Research Committee, we aim to function collaboratively and transparently. So we are asking that when a chapter has a lineage research problem, they first go to someone in the states. We want the states to know what's going on with the chapters, that we want them to know when a chapter has a problem, so that the state has an opportunity to train and teach and be aware of what's going on. Once they go through their state and if they still need assistance, then we are more than happy to help with any problem that they have. And they would come to us. There's a form on the website. Eventually, we hope to have this automated, and we'll have some updates coming in the future, we hope.
That's great.
But right now, there's a form on the website that they fill out and send to me, and then we will route it to the appropriate person to get them the lineage help. The other difference is we are not going to assume responsibility for submitting papers. You ask us to solve a problem. We need a lineage link between John Henry and his son, Sam. Mm-hmm. We'll try to provide a chapter or a state with that solution. Give them the docs, give them the information that they want. And then they will be the ones in charge of preparing the application and submitting it and shepherding it all the way through.
And speaking of forwarding somebody's request to the appropriate person, you have a lot of national vice chairs, don't you? Would you tell us a little bit about them?
We actually have 17 at present time, and they are divided by task. First off, we see that we are going to have applications coming in from three different really types of applications. First, we have units overseas, and we have Martha Rem, who's a fabulous researcher who is dedicating herself to helping the units overseas. They have their own unique set of problems being far away, and she is networking with those chapters and trying to help them, because some of those chapters are as small as 6 members. The second type of application that we get are unsubmitted applications. The chapter registrar just cannot find a patriot on that, or they can't solve a particular lineage link to get the proofs that they need. So they submit it as an unsubmitted application to us, and it's routed through Jenny Inske. And then we have applications that have received error letters. And that's additional information requested. So those have been submitted to the DAR, and the genealogist has seen a problem. Kathy Krusko is the National Vice Chair in charge of the papers that have received an error letter. If a member is working on an application for a prospective member and they would like to have a consultation, we can do that virtually. Diana Kading is the National Vice Chair in charge of virtual support. And she hooks anyone up that wants it with a volunteer genealogist for a consultation over phone or Zoom or Google Meets or whatever is appropriate for them, and helps them along with that. Then we have Karen Jancy, who's been named the National Vice Chair for Analysis Review. She's just wonderful. So we're looking forward to her, to having her look over all the analysis that we prepare, so that when we send them in, we're much more confident that they're going to be accepted. Now, an analysis is, for those who don't know, an analysis is when you do not have direct evidence of lineage, of a situation, of a fact that you need to prove, and you have to use circumstantial evidence. And when that happens, you have to kind of write a logical sequence of statements, and it has to be in a particular order. So that's what we're talking about with analysis. The newest addition to our team is Dawn Fleischens. And Dawn is an expert in electronic applications. We drafted Dawn to come over and work with us because coming down the road, we expect there to be more and more electronic applications, and we expect certain enhancements and certain expansions of the process to happen. So we want to be ready for that. She will also work on teaching people and preparing good tutorials so that people understand how to do an electronic application. And then we have one more big area. We have regional teams. Regional teams are designed to replace what was formerly the Lineage Research Lookup Board, where someone could log on to the research board and say, I need a document in so-and-so county. Is there anyone there who could get that? Well, we have a more proactive approach with our regional teams. We have 7 regional areas of the country that are defined, each with a national vice chair in charge of that region. And in addition, we have a regional team based in Salt Lake City. which focuses on the Family Search Library. And we have a regional team in Washington, D.C. that will focus on the DAR Library and also the National Archives. So that when we as a team or someone needs something, we can hopefully go and actively say, okay, you are here. Could you go get us XYZ? Can you do a simple search of all the counties in so-and-so county of such and such state in this book and tell us what is there? So we're really trying to be proactive and solve some of these problems. And then one more vice chair we have is most important to me is Cindy Serwinski, and she is our National Vice Chair of Communications, and she helps me with all sorts of stuff to help us get the word out to the public and on the web.
Wow, Susan, that is incredible. The team you have, that is amazing. Oh, it's so vital to what we do in DAR as far as, you know, getting our members in, getting their, you know, applications completed and turned in. And that just sounds like it's really going to do a good job of doing that. But
I certainly hope so.
Let me ask you, what are you most looking forward to while serving as the national chair of this really vital committee?
It's the women that we meet, the people that we meet. There is no way that we would ever, you and I, Brooke, we would have never met except through DAR, and we met up in Washington, D.C. I have met so many wonderful women and learned so much from them and gained so much personally from knowing them. It's a part of DAR. I think that those of us who are in it treasure so much. The second thing is we Texans, we know what a fabulous leader Pamela Wright is. Oh. And I am so looking forward to seeing how all of these changes that she's already made and decisions that she and her team will make in the coming 3 years and what good things they're going to do for our society.
Thank you so much for being with me here today. And we just really wish you the best of luck for you and your team and all that you're going to do. I'm really excited for our members to learn what you do, because I don't know how many of them know the scope of work that you all do in your team.
It's quite a job, but we have fabulous team members that I'm so proud of the work that they're doing and that they will be doing over the next 3 years. It's such an honor to be a member of this society and such an honor to serve in this administration.
Thank you so much, Susan.
I'm always amazed at the scope of work being done within this organization. It's our sincere hope that as we go through these episodes, take this journey along together, that you hear and see some things that delight and surprise you as well. Well, next month, we'll talk with our Service to Veterans Chair, and we'll also get to know our very fun and truly delightful First Vice President General Ginny Sebastian Storage. I leave you with this quote by Condoleezza Rice. "The essence of America, that which really unites us, is not ethnicity or nationality or religion. It is an idea. And what an idea it is, that you can come from humble circumstances and do great things." Thanks for listening, and be well, dear friends. Let's celebrate the stars and stripes forever. And remember, with all of your ancestors behind you, you are the result of the love of thousands. This podcast was written and produced by our incredible team of writers and editors, but special thanks today go to Mrs. Etta Reed, a DAR Today podcast contributing writer, for teaching us all so much about the Edenton Patriots. Our thanks, too, to our liaison and historian general, Suzanne Heskey, and to Adele Lancaster and Susan Johnston for being so generous with their time. The National Society, Daughters of the American Revolution, is a nonprofit, non-political, volunteer women's service organization dedicated to promoting patriotism, preserving American history, and securing America's future through better education for children. Members are all lineal descendants of those who supported the cause of independence in the Revolutionary War. For more information, please visit DAR.org. This is the DAR Today podcast.